IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome once again to episode 47 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
I'm Carl, and I'm here today with both Dave and Ryan. And now I know we're all home.
Yes, we are all on this side of the world. However, I will say, an adventure getting back, because as an individual who recently did a business trip to China, not that part of China, traveling back last week from the UK, having nothing at all to do with China, I was invited to join the CDC for some additional screening on my way back into the country. So
it's nice to know that's what I'm in for.
Exactly. What I can say for sure is they are checking. Congratulations. Good for them.
That's awesome.
They got to do. So I'm heading out. As this, between the time we record this and the time it airs, I will have either gone to Thailand via Hong Kong or not.
Well, see, and so we're recording this the day before I go on vacation. It releases the day I'm back from vacation. So in between recording and its release, I will go on vacation and come back.
But not to China.
No, not to China. I'm going to Panama, the country, not the city in Florida, but I'm going down to Panama for some warm weather and some jazz festival. And I will see some fellow channel folks while I'm down there.
Very nice. So I'm off to Thailand, and the good news is I'm on Singapore Airlines. So if I get to the airport and they decide to cancel the flight, I'll just say, hey, take me through another country. And then I don't ever have to answer the question. Yes, I was in China.
Right.
In the last 2 weeks.
You're covered based on their routing options. You're good to go.
Exactly. So anyway, so we shall see what the future holds. It's always an adventure. All right. So we're going to start very lighthearted today. I loved this story because it scares the hell out of me. This performance artist filled a little kitty wagon with 99 cell phones, turned on the GPS, and created a fake traffic jam in Berlin. And he was just walking down the street and Google picked it up, and Google Maps started saying, oh, there's this massive amount of traffic. And, you know, they started rerouting people. And the guy is kind of an a-hole, to be honest. Goes over a bridge, which means now everybody gets rerouted to different bridges. That's not cool.
You know, he also,
making a point is one thing, but
he also did it in front of Google's headquarters, which is another brilliant move on his part from a trolling perspective. So, I mean, look, first off, it's hilarious, right? It's right. Brilliant on the performance artist. This is exactly the kind of statement you make, and good for him. He blew up and went viral. It is also a lovely testament from the perspective of, you need to understand how your data is collected and understand that someone will find a way to game whatever system you put together.
Right.
It is reliable that someone is going to find a way to exploit it. You know, the negative side is this is how hackers are penetrating things. This is how phishing attacks happen. Is someone's going to find the way of using this for evil. In a way, performance artists like this give us another way of talking about it to put that into context.
Well, but again, as people who do data for a living, right, whether this is market research and analytics, or whether it is customer traffic, or performance in systems and automation, we deal with data for a living. And we can get a little bit self-righteous, I think, as an industry about, well, this is a data-driven organization and we require numbers in order to make decisions. Yeah, but those numbers are only as good as the raw information that they are tracking. And to the degree that there are people, bad actors, who are trying to manipulate the systems, you need to be aware of that. But I think it's much more common. How many times have you been driving down the street and it says on your mobile phone application of choice, by the way, there's a traffic jam coming up. You ought to reroute. And you get to that location and there's absolutely no hint of a traffic jam. I think they have a latency issue. I think the rest of us have just a validity issue. We need to be paying attention to the sources and the scrubbing of data. If that's going to become what all the pundits say, the lifeblood of the digital economy is your data, y'all might want to make sure that that stuff is actually true.
This alludes to the bias problem too, is understanding that data can have implicit bias built into it, or the humans that create it may have biases. That isn't necessarily always bad. I just want to point out that biases happen. There are good biases. There are bad biases. There are neutral biases.
My first thought about it was that it points out the fragility of the system, right? It takes 99 cell phones, which is not cheap. I'm assuming they weren't all iPhone 11s.
No, I think they were cheap. He borrowed them from friends.
These were throwaway phones, but it's not that difficult to muck up the system. And, it reminds me of the fragility of the DNS system and, and many other things that, I was just talking to somebody, believe it or not, about the origins of TCP/IP and how it was designed to be stable over an unstable network. And then we've circumvented that by having these massive choke points called Verizon and T-Mobile, right? And so, our system is far more fragile than we would like to believe it is. And
please tell me that was not at a cocktail hour, that was not your discussion at cocktail hour.
It is what we find. Well, yeah.
You wanted to know why I get kicked out of cocktail parties. I think that's probably what.
But again, I think that we live in a world that is, we are all significantly confident in the systems that we use. We take for granted the specifications on the back of the data sheet, as it were, that, well, this is what the system says it's going to do. Therefore, this is what the system does. Except as an individual who's already had two conference calls this morning prior to this recording that began with a series of fast, busy signals because the system was overloaded and I had to dial back in multiple times before I could get a circuit and get through. It is good, to remember that these systems are not bulletproof and there is no such thing as 5-9s in production, but it does also remind us of, systems engineering and design 101, no single point of failure, right? If you're going to have a single data stream indicate a traffic jam in a Maps application, maybe a secondary check on that might be
What's the secondary check though? Like name another traffic app. There's got to be one.
Well, in some cases you could use video data. You could actually pull the transit data. So I live the DC Metro. I talk about there's cameras all over the city in terms of looking at the roads. You could verify that there's actually a blockage in many of those common places.
Subscribe to the map of the local authorities, because we do the same thing. They had all these sensors in the road, so they know it's 22 minutes during your commute from point A to point B.
Watch us learn that that's all Google data. If it was all Google data, I'm going to be so sad to find out that that's just all coming back around and we're all getting one data set.
But that's actually a good point, because if you were running a city and Google said, hey, let us take the data from your sensors, we'll put up the website for you, it won't cost you anything, you would do it.
Right.
And now your city gets tied into the same thing and dude with 99 cell phones takes you out.
Yeah, yes. Well, what I can say, and we've worked with solution providers doing these specific solutions, fixed LPR, license plate recognition, right? As a technology, you put a camera on a light pole, a telephone pole somewhere in a fixed location, and it recognizes A, the quantity and pace of vehicles coming through that spot, and B, which ones are coming through that spot. So for law enforcement purposes, they will use this to identify suspect vehicles or repetitive visits and things like that. But for traffic and event management, it has significant value at the municipal level as well as at the corporate level. These are things that are, I mean, it ain't cheap to do something like that on a citywide basis, but it's also not prohibitive, right? It can be done by your local town. And I believe this stuff is coming rapidly. And I believe, and again, just to kind of take this full circle, if you go back to how do you game the system, there's remote cell phone data, there's video, there are other sensor type applications. I think you can build something that has some redundancy in the sources of information. I will extrapolate that conversation to say that's what you need to be doing as a technology solutions provider. Just because you're monitoring somebody's network does not mean you have the full robust picture of what's actually happening in their traffic. So please be aware of what your customers are doing on their network.
Now, hopefully some insight that people can take into actionable stuff, including two data sources.
Exactly. So topic two. So we're going to go from light to heavy. And this one, Dave, you are going to point us to an article that somebody wrote.
Yes. So let's start with an opinion piece from a listener out there. Keith Schoolcraft of Two Gurus had a piece on LinkedIn. So we'll put the link in the show notes for everyone to get. And he comes from just the same kind of place that I do. He's a fellow tinkerer, and he was spending a Saturday morning browsing YouTube videos on how to repair electronics.
And as one does,
like a nerd like I do. And he I love it because he quoted game consoles as one. It's like, oh, right to where I love it too. But he quoted that he found a video about testimony regarding legislation in Washington State, Ryan, your state, around right to repair, specifically SB 5799. In Keith's article, he has a link to it where one of the an owner of a small IT shop talks about the need for right to repair. And there's an increasing trend by manufacturers who either void warranties or refuse to service their products if the consumer performs any of their own repairs. And by the way, that can include battery replacement. Or they flat out block suppliers from selling replacement parts. What Keith was so shocked about, and what also resonated with me, was that Anna Powell, the Director of State Government Affairs for CompTIA, testifies also against the bill on behalf of the 2,000 members of CompTIA. And they are against this bill, which was protecting the right to repair. And so CompTIA has testified that they are backing up their manufacturer sponsors rather than potential independent service providers and the technicians who take their certifications, as Keith so well put it in his article, and I wholeheartedly agree with.
So all three of us are CompTIA members.
We are.
Get that out of the way.
We're allowed to speak on this because we pay our dues.
Exactly. So it is being represented as if we are opposed to the right to repair. Now, I got to say, I think there's a lot more gray area than there is black and white. Right to repair, you know, Apple wants to say, hey, we have the right to control our environment. And, you know, the people who repair cell phones for a living say, look, it's not that difficult to replace a battery. and I won't screw up the rest of the phone. But in the middle are, should I have the right to repair an old junky piece of crap plastic thing that cost me $8? Or is there some point at which, look, some things you have the right to repair and some things you don't? Like sometimes it makes sense.
So Carl, I want to take this conversation a very specific way on this, because I think we could have a very healthy right to repair conversation. Where I actually want to go with this is the people that are lobbying on behalf.
No, I understand.
That's, and so because I'm with you, like, and I'm very pro right to repair. I'm a tinkerer. I like that kind of stuff. I think the more liberal the policies is better. What I focus here on is that there's a lot of industry lobbying organizations that are working on behalf of the manufacturers. I was surprised to find CompTIA on that list.
On that side of it.
Well, even having a position at all, let me observe that they have a diverse membership base that includes some very large companies and some very small companies that work, that have very different perspectives. They have also weighed in on a number of tax issues, of which I won't get into this particular podcast, but it is very clear that their lobbying organization is taking direction from a subset of the overall membership. I believe CompTIA specifically has a specific membership class that is for those people that are involved in the lobbying efforts. And I'll be very bold and criticize CompTIA in saying, I believe you are misrepresenting yourself outside to the rest of the world by saying we are representing our 2,000 members. No, you are representing either a subset of those members, or you have not talked to all of us and gotten us involved in your efforts. Because
all three of us as members, nobody surveyed us about that,
right?
We're extrapolating the data to infer what the statistically relevant sample would indicate. But see, I go exactly where you're at, right? I think that there are a few very large members, and there are very many very small members. If you took those 2,000 and did a plot against an annual revenue chart, I think that of those 2,000, more than 1,900 would have under 20 million in total annual revenue. I think that where the interest of the manufacturer to keep the device itself, closed and locked and require either authorized access or no access and forced repurchase. I get it from their point of view, right? If I'm putting on my manufacturer's hat, I understand the business model on consumable technologies.
Right.
However, I do not believe that is what, if you took an actual vote of those 2,000 people, I don't believe a majority of them would indicate that they are either manufacturers or for locking down all of these devices. I get the diversity of the membership and the difficulty that gives to them for representing everybody. But when you don't have a consensus, the answer is
stay out of it.
Don't have an opinion.
Well, and my point in talking about the wide variety of opinions on this and why there's a lot of gray area in the middle is simply that all of that range is represented within CompTIA. But in terms of numbers, there are more people repairing devices in CompTIA than there are manufacturing devices, and not just cell phones. I mean, how long has it been since you've looked at this computer that said warranty void if opened, right? So, and everyone listening to this can open a computer and replace RAM or upgrade the hard drive.
Right. Be very clear on this. So my statement is look, if you can't accurately represent your membership, don't weigh in. Sorry, you can't do it. Or you need to be much more clear with your messaging on where your lobbying is. And I will challenge our listener bases. We've talked a lot. I talk a lot about these kinds of issues, both on this podcast and on my Business Tech one. This is very much a get involved moment. If you are a member and you have an opinion, I believe you should say it. I believe now is exactly the time to send up the chain through the chain of command and say, I do not believe in this. And by the way, this is exactly what I'm doing. I am sending a message out there saying, I'm not on board. I do not agree. And I will say so, in both as a member and not. And get involved.
I will fully admit, when I go to the meeting, I'm going to be there next month. I'm going to be there in August. I tend to go to advancing technology, emerging technologies. I tend to go to managed services. I tend to go to cloud services. I go to advancing diversity. I tend not to go to the lobbying forums, and my voice is not heard there.
Yes.
Well, so I'll just put that out there. So
it's fair, but
I still get to throw rocks.
Yeah. Well, you,
and based on my personal experience, right, I think that when there are fly-in events and when there are people who aggressively participate in the lobbying activities, it's certainly not 100%, but almost everyone that I've personally known involved in that has come from the manufacturer side of the industry, not from the solution provider side of the industry. If you don't agree with what's going on, then you need to get involved, right? If we have this opinion and we say that doesn't represent us, then it does, you know, it does come back to us to say either participate or keep it to yourself. I think that is it's one of the very good purposes of CompTIA, right? To represent us as an industry with a collective voice. That's an incredibly positive thing. I think we need to take better advantage of it because the industry at large, especially small businesses in the channel, in technology, I don't think that we've really advocated for our interests. And if you go back one episode in our podcast here talking about the security implications of MSPs and how the liability is going to find a way to roll downhill, it's becoming more and more urgent for individual companies to advocate for their own interests. And Dave, you said it last time, this is coming. These laws are going to happen and the regulations are going to be written that will govern your industry. Do you want to have a voice in that or not?
Right. And so that is very much true. And I think for all, you know, I'm also with Carl, I'm going to this meeting and I'm going to be seeking out the opportunities to express my opinion on this. my comment up the chain for CompTIA is look, CompTIA, you need to be really clear about who you represent when you say these kinds of things. If you are saying you represent on behalf of your members and you mean everybody, then you have to give us all an opportunity to weigh in. If it is a subclass of people that have paid at another level or financed it at one level, then you do not get to speak for all of us. You do not get to say we are the trade organization for everyone if you have not given us all the opportunity to weigh in. And I think that is, I feel, very fair criticism. And you cannot stand on stage and say, you represent me if I'm not actually given the opportunity to do it unless I buy in at some other level. You have to say, we can represent you if you buy in at some other level. And you also have to go out to the industry and say, we represent the paying members at this exclusive level. Because you do not represent all members, if that's what you're doing.
I suspect we will revisit this issue.
Oh, I have a feeling we'll hear from someone. So, yeah, I think we'll see this.
Very good. Well, thank you for that. All right, final topic. So now we're in the middle, like not light, not heavy, but somewhere in the middle.
How about we start with Carl? This is an opportunity for Ryan to make me look stupid because I do not get this one.
So. I totally get this. So this is chunk, chunk. Hey, let's go 3D print us a building. And now the race is on to 3D print a bigger, better, faster building.
See, so now the technology is something that I believe is absolutely fascinating. I think it will have more practical commercial applications coming up here in the very, very near future. It's not new, right? We've been doing 3D printing at a mass scale for a number of years. If you do a Google search on this, we were printing houses at the South by Southwest conference probably 4 or 5 years ago down in Texas. And again, I find it to be fascinating. This new article that we're referencing, it's the largest ever 3D printed structure. And the only reason why I think 3D printing this structure makes any viable commercial sense at all, on site with the materials, no shipping and receiving to get materials to a difficult location, and then based on the nature of the technology, infinite geometries and absolute customization.
Well, you can do
whatever you wish to imagine as opposed to just what the materials are for.
And the important thing, I think, long term. And this may be what you're having trouble with, Dave, is why.
Right. I don't get it.
I think the why is this is a almost 7,000 square foot building, 31 feet tall, with a design that you can't build out of wood. And it was done with 3 employees on site. And when you look at the construction of, you know, and I know where you live, right? So they construct entire neighborhoods at a time, right?
Well, but actually, so let me dive in an area that you may not expect. So I don't understand why this is where this industry is innovating on. When from my perspective, I look and say, this is one of the few industries where it seems like we are trying to do artisanal building at scale. Every single construction site, they build everything on site custom, even when the home is exactly the same. So they're putting in 20 new homes right by my house. Every single one ships out tons of pieces of wood that individual craftsmen then assemble into walls and frames and structures. I don't understand why people are not creating standard walls that get assembled and standard floors that get assembled and standard, like, why have the parts not gotten bigger when instead we're going to more specialization with 3D printing? I don't get it.
Well, actually ask and you shall receive, because there is an engineer out there doing these things, right? In fact, if you think of this from the context of architecture and construction multiplied by the emerging industry of additive manufacturing, there are actual examples of not just individual structures that are being constructed 3D printing, but entire neighborhoods. And while this is an extreme use case to draw attention, and, you know, I think they think it's fun, and that's probably why they did this thing, not a lot of practical purposes to it. But if you take the fact that I can build anything anywhere of any size, shape, and objective without limitations to materials, then I can bring that back and say, okay, how about there's a flood that happens in a location, and instead of trying to ship in train loads of temporary shelters and sheds and such to house people in, I can go there with this equipment and I can rapidly, like down to 2 houses per day kind of production rate, I can build a safe and dry dwelling that is intended to be radically low cost, extremely fast production cycles, and I can eliminate all the transportation costs. I can eliminate all of the living in the gymnasium at the local basketball court, right? I can get rid of all that stuff and I can solve a specific problem. Now, that's 2 very different ends of the spectrum in terms of use cases. And I think what you're going to find is exactly where you're talking, Dave. Additive manufacturing will get to the point where houses are no longer radically custom assemblies of very small specialized parts, but they will become more systems integration, where I don't have to solder the motherboard to deploy a server in a data center. I just need to have a wall. I need to have a bathroom floor that is pre-plumbed and wired, etc. I think that's exactly where the industry is going, for speed, for scale, for cost effectiveness. I think this has tremendous upside.
Okay. So then it's good to hear that I'm not like totally insane, because my statement on this, on 3D printing, has remained, first off, it is cool, right? Like, it's super cool. And I love the idea of like the Star Trek replicator kind of coming along at some level. But what has always felt like to me is that 3D printing is for very specialized individual use cases and is not a mass consumption technology. It's because additionally, if you need something built, you know, if 3D, quote unquote, 3D printed at scale, that's what China is for. Like, that is, and I've said that sort of joke before, right? Is that if you need something done, that's what a manufacturing system is for. Send it to China. You'll get thousands of units back super cheap, you know, and that's the way you do things at scale.
So I think a big piece of this will be used, 3D printing buildings, to address the question of affordable housing. When you think of how many hours of labor it takes to build a, you know, forget the 6,000, 7,000 square foot, you know, a 1,500, 2,000 square foot house. It's phenomenal. And then you think about, you know, I don't know what you guys pay for workers' comp. It's not cheap for me. I have two employees. None of them go up on a roof with, you know, heavy equipment. None of them have nail guns, right? So the workers' comp and the expenses of the labor will drive this piece of the industry. And, in it, you know, maybe it'll be just extra profit for the manufacturers, but it might also be a more affordable housing.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I see these stories around 3D printing, and I want, the nerd in me wants to be jazzed, and then I instantly go, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand the fascination, because it seems special.
Let me just say, you don't get it yet, because I agree with you that mass scale is more affordable via offshore manufacturing today, but that is precisely where the technology is headed. Mass customization at scale. Any part for any system on site, on demand, and that stuff is actually coming, right? If you're interested in a fascinating use case, HP using inkjet technology, which they obviously know exceptionally well, repurposed for not ink dots, but what they will call voxels instead of pixels, right? The actual deposit unit of a very small amount of material, they can customize colors. They can customize shapes and materials. They are moving beyond plastics and into metals. It is absolutely fascinating where they are going, and they are about to release things for mass consumption that are not just for advanced engineering types to do rapid prototyping, but for you and me to make the things that we need, or for a local service provider en masse to produce the things that their community.
Yeah, I mean, it's been coming for a long time. We're still at the stage with the smaller 3D printing that there hasn't been a killer app. There hasn't been anything that I need to produce myself that isn't cheaper in China. So that, to Dave's point, I mean, that's where we are still today for things smaller than houses. If you're not in the prototyping business, not much has changed. But I do think this bodes well for the long term of 3D printing and for opportunities.
Look, I am happy to be wrong. The whole point of this is to bring up ideas and challenge things. So I'm completely comfortable being wrong, but I just keep saying, like, I keep looking at this going, I just don't get it. So, okay, cool.
So my last thought on this is, what is the future service provider opportunity? So that, let's say you don't want to own a 3D printer, but I can provide one to you temporarily on your site, and it will include materials, add-ons, know-how, design, da-da-da-da, right? There's a service opportunity there, and then I take my printer and go somewhere else.
Well, there is absolutely a business model around that. And in fact, I happen to know of a group based in Ogden, Utah, that has a warehouse full of printers that does that for a living right now, right? You want to do architectural models, you want to do surgical models and simulation, you want to do mass scale, rapid prototyping. You don't need to purchase and maintain and operate all of those things. It's a service provider, right? You used to ship everything out for four color printing. Now you can do that in your office. Hey, we're at the stage where you can ship out everything for professional 3D production from a digital rendering file. It's absolutely coming to your local town.
Very cool. All right. I think that's it for the day. Have a great vacation, Dave. And we won't see you again until you're back from
exactly.
Back.
All the listeners will hear me post vacation. Sure, it will be great.
They like you weren't gone.
Enjoy the sunshine vicariously for all of us.
I will do my best.
All righty. And that will conclude episode 47 of the Killing It,
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.